What's something, some of those innovations, what's been exciting for you as a salesman to get out there into the world?
I think it's a common theme that whenever you use ground penetrating radar, everyone's always trying to get something more out of it, right? Because they've had that day where they go out with the radar and they're in the perfect soils and they image that target down deep. And
hey, this is Forrest and Arian with the Concrete Conversations podcast. Arian, say hi.
Hi.
I don't just like sit around telling my wife what to do. She wanted to say hi, and I was just
I wanted to.
Prompting
Thank
her.
You for allowing me the opportunity.
No. For the reminder, not the allowing thing. That doesn't look good. It was a reminder. Anyway, we're both saying hi. Today we had Matthew L. Dragon. I don't know his middle name. It might be B or M. He might not have a middle name. Matthew, middle name redacted, Dragon, was on the podcast today. It was amazing for the following reasons. First, he came on the podcast, so that's amazing. Second, you have to watch the podcast episode. So we talked about sales stuff. We talked about GPR. We talked about Screening Eagle. We talked about advice for young professionals. Arian, was there anything lame that we discussed?
No, it was all golden. Loved it.
It was all golden. Okay. It was gold-plated amazingness from Matthew L. Dragon. Matt, if that's not your middle initial, I'm really sorry. I had a 1 in 26 chance that is your middle initial, so I took it. So let's just watch the episode.
Well, let's just jump right in. So Matt, you didn't start out as the sales director for North America. What advice would you give to a young sales professional just starting out? We're going to get right into it.
Young sales professionals will start to dig into a role, selling a product or a service. And very quickly, they come at it really motivated, then they're really excited. But then as they sort of dig into it deeper and deeper, it gets difficult. Because contrary to what everybody believes, sales is difficult. Like you have got to be very focused and you've got to be somewhat really diligent and relentless with whatever you're selling, right? And the more you know about the market and the more that you know about the sales process and your product and or service that you're selling, the more challenging it'll get because there really is no limit as to how you apply your knowledge and your skills and things like that. So I would say that definite recommendation would be to expect that you're going to start a sales role and you're going to be on a high point. And then a couple of years into it, you're going to start to understand that, wow, this isn't as easy as I thought. It takes real commitment. It takes participation in the industry. Maybe at a thought leadership level, it takes a lot of commitment and time. So I would say that at that point in time, there is a moment at which a salesperson says, oh, this was so easy before. Why don't I just go find something else? Because it's really difficult now, right? And I would say that that's the moment in time that you really need to dig in and hold on. And maybe deal with, kind of the corporate stuff from up here and the hassles from down there as far as fulfillment of orders and things like that. So it gets hard after the honeymoon period, but you got to hang in there because there's big rewards if you do.
That's a great point. Thank you, Matt. And by the way, everyone should, if you want to follow Matt, he has a LinkedIn profile there. And also if you want to stay up to date with the content that we have, please follow us on Concrete Conversations so that we can get more great content from people like Matt. So yeah, what you're saying there is that it's there is that honeymoon period. And that what you're saying is like there's this excitement that is gone after a couple of years, and that's when you've noticed in your life too that it's gotten harder to stay with it.
Right. How am I going to contribute? How am I going to add value every single day? How am I going to take my team? Well, let's say it's a negative sales climate for some reason, right? How am I going to take my team and sort of drag them forward so we all can be successful? How am I going to motivate them and be really mature and not necessarily be like a hard-nosed leader, but you can lead through example. You can make suggestions. You can, you know, don't participate in negative company talk sort of scenarios. So there's a lot of ways that as a salesperson, a human being, that you can impact other people around you and bring the crew to more success.
You know, Matt, you're talking about being part of a team and, you know, leading team. And that was one of the big things that I appreciated when I was working with you. So, Matt, you were my sales manager several years ago when we were working at the same company. And I learned through experience how amazing it was to have a sales manager who was a salesman also. And that was, for me, that was a novel experience because in my past sales roles, I was not managed by anyone with any sales acumen, any sales experience. In fact, they were all in the service side of things. Could you speak to that a little bit, the importance of having a salesman as a sales manager over a sales team?
So I think obviously there is some points there that are kind of, you know, transparent and obvious that, you know, if you work with a sales manager that has been in the scenario before, you know, they're bringing experience to the table, and that's super important. But I would say, I would argue that more important than that is that as a sales manager, you're really kind of operating like a parent or a partner, right? And you can bring a person into a room and have them do like a sales presentation or whatever, and then critique it afterwards and come up with different suggestions. But how you deliver that message is how you're going to impact that salesperson's life, right? So if I'm super critical when I deliver criticism to a salesperson, even if I have their interest at heart, like even if I truly believe that the words that I'm choosing are going to benefit that individual, I can have the wrong tone. I can make it so there is an adversarial relationship between the salesperson and the sales manager. I can do that really simple, right? By being sort of condescending without even really noticing it, right? But I think that if you approach all these scenarios with a lot of empathy and a lot of caring for that individual, and your goal is to make them successful, so you're successful, right? But really, it's in a lot of ways, it's to make them successful, right? Because the company had a commitment to that salesperson. They brought them on, and it's sort of this you know, off the paperwork commitment of we're going to employ you, you're going to go out and you're going to spread our message and narrative and impact our revenue, right? So I want to make certain that that commitment is upheld, and that not only that salesperson becomes a good salesperson, but also sees a viable career for them in the future. So I think, yes, it's great to have a sales manager that is experienced, even if it's from a different industry. But it's better, it's great to have that manager be a real coach that believes in your success. Like when we worked together, you know, I knew that you had a young family. I knew that even though you're a charismatic sort of a character and still are, you know, it was my responsibility to make it so you could fulfill your responsibilities at home. And that's how I looked at it. And that's how I think sales managers need to look at it. You need to be an advocate for your salespeople. And then in turn, they need to listen to what you're trying to coach them as far as a sales behavior, because sales is not like I get frustrated with people that think sales is all about, you know, that buying a car, that used car salesman sort of motif. And people say, well, I could never be a salesperson. I can't lie. You know, well, that's, you know, none of that's true at all. Right. I mean, sales, think about it, in every industry, I'm sorry to run off here, but in every part of any kind of product service that anybody can come up with, you can have a product that is engineered amazingly, right? And it's mind-boggling how great this thing is. But if you can't take all those good things and put them into some sort of a message and then go out and articulate what the value add of that product is, right? That product's not going to go anywhere. Sure, maybe it'll experience a little bit of revenue, but ultimately you need to have somebody that's going to go out and present that product for what it is and where it fits into the marketplace. And that's what a salesperson does. I like to think of it, and always have, that, you know, as a salesperson, I'm just helping people. I'm helping people to do their job better, stronger, faster, whatever, however you want to phrase it.
You used the word there, advocate, and that was the exact word that I was thinking of when I was when you were my sales manager. You were, and I spoke with many other of the sales team about this, that the two words that I'd say were most commonly used to describe you and your relationship with us is that you were an advocate. And you were loyal, that you were just amazingly loyal. You advocated for us. You made sure that we had the things that we needed to be successful. And it was just, as a sales manager, I've never worked for anybody better than when I was working under you. And it was really phenomenal. That's why I was really interested to have you on the show and be able to just kind of dig down deep into that, because I would love to take the Matt Dragon sales manager DNA, whatever that is, and go and plant that into every sales manager across the country. And I think that everybody could benefit from that. So I appreciate what you're saying.
Those are some really kind words. I appreciate that, Forrest. It depends on what brings you joy, right? Now, I've identified for me what brings me joy in work is that I can help people get better at the sales process, understand it better, and just become a better person out there representing the product or service, right? And I like that, because what happens is once you get beyond, you know, kind of hammering on people for revenue numbers every month or whatever that, you know, sort of corporate message is, you really get to know the person and what their likes and dislikes are and what motivates them, you know. I end up having good relationships with any salesperson that's ever reported to me. And many people do keep in touch with me still today. I have an open door policy. I'd love to chat with whoever in the past, you know, because when you think about doing the right thing for your client, doing the right thing for your company, if you put those as a priority, you'll end up being a very good salesperson, you know, regardless. So I appreciate that.
Yeah.
Well, you want me to, you want me to join your team and I can manage you again?
That sounds great. Let's find a position.
I think that's a great point that you brought up about how it's not just about the bottom dollar and we need to make these sales, but it's about the people and those relationships, and it is relationship building. I think that is something that not most people think about a salesperson, is that they want to build relationships and not just, you know, make some money. No, every we mentioned a little bit with getting to know Forrest when you were both working together, that you knew he had a young family. You also have a family too, right? What
I
was
do.
It like? Yeah. So what was it like raising a family as a salesperson? What did was that difficult for you, as especially starting out with, you know?
You have to have a good wife.
Yeah. So, yeah, it takes two, right?
So, you know, I live in New Hampshire, and, you know, there's not a huge amount of industry here in New Hampshire. So I spent most of my time traveling all over the country and into Canada, too. So unfortunately, I was away a lot. And I think it's really important to keep the dialogue open with my now adult children, because, you know, they've let me know that I was away a lot, and how they didn't really like that. And of course, you know, I try not to throw it in their face, but, you like your college education, right? So, you know, I mean, there's trade-offs there, but I find that it's super important that when you are home, you really need to connect. You know, you need to connect with either your spouse or the kids or whatnot. And I'm pretty proud of my kids. I've got my oldest daughter works for Google, and she does, you know, genius things every day. I don't even know how to describe it. And then my youngest daughter is a surgical nurse in Boston. And I have an adopted son who is in banking and currently like climbing the ladder, and all three of them are doing great. So I have my wife to thank a lot for their success, that's for sure. I mean, salespeople and their sales manager, it is somewhat like a family. And anybody that's been involved in a family, you know that there are issues that come up along the way, right? And you have to be comfortable with talking about uncomfortable things, right? So within your sales team, as well as with your client, even though you have a good relationship with that client, if something's gone wrong or whatever, you know, you've got to be able to stick to the truth, you know. I don't know if that answers your question or if I'm just mumbling, but, you know.
It sounds like what you were saying before about relationship building wasn't just part of your professional life, but also you made sure to make that part of your personal life, too, to make sure that you had those relationships. Even though you were traveling a lot, you have those relationships with your children and your wife, too. To make sure that they know that they can come talk to you about the hard things, and know that even though you're physically away, that you are there for them as well.
Correct. Yeah.
Well, and the concerning this, the whole like theme of a sales professional's home. I mean, I don't, Matt, I know that you have a varied background in sales, both in the ground penetrating radar industry and subsurface mapping and just all sorts of stuff, but even outside of GPR also, you have a varied sales background. But one thing that is not ubiquitous, but very common across industries is that entry-level sales positions start off with entry-level pay, which often looks like commission only or a low base salary plus commission. What kind of advice can you give to a young sales professional who's dealing with those realities of straight commission or low salary plus commission?
So I would say that, you know, sales is a performance role, right? And you've got to go out and you've got to perform, right? And essentially what's happening as a salesperson, you're executing a strategy, okay? And the strategy is created by whatever corporate entity is responsible for that, right? So it's product or a service, and there's some sort of a strategy how you're going to approach that market. So as a salesperson, you have to understand the strategy and ask a bunch of questions about that, right? But To your question, you can go out and execute the strategy and still have a problem with results, okay? And, you know, my advice would be to make certain that you give well-articulated feedback back to the people that created the strategy. I mean, I've been in a sales role before where the strategy was flawed, right? It was, and it took me, you know, 18 months to figure it out, that the corporate strategy was just not going to work. And of course, as a salesperson, you try to get clever and creative, then you go down different roads and you try to do different things to make things happen. But the role was just not going to work because it was flawed, because I was coming at something from a regional level instead of a local level. And I couldn't really come at it from a local level because I was a regional salesperson. So, so you have to give feedback because that strategy should be a conversation between you and the corporate folks. How are we going to go to market with this? And then this is what my clients are saying. So I would say that if you're a young salesperson starting out into some particular market, learn as much as you can about the product or service. Learn as much as you can about the value-added narrative that is going to be created by the strategy. Learn as much as you can about the perfect client that you want to talk to, because you can waste a lot of time talking to people that don't care. Learn about what that zone is, and then go out and execute that, and execute it well with a high level of confidence. But then when you start to detect, where the strategy is letting you down because of changes in the industry or that perfect client demographic that you're trying to approach, you need to give that feedback back because it's going to hurt your performance. I would say that if I'm a young salesperson and I'm out there and I'm selling something and I have a high level of performance and I'm earning the money that I feel that I should be earning, I'm probably not going to say much. I'm just going to go out and execute, right? But it's important that when the business starts to drop, you need to communicate that information back in a very professional way. And this is exactly what I would tell a salesperson that reported to me. You know, I would obviously want to go out and do ride-alongs with that person and see how they carry the message. But they need to know specifically what's the demographic of people that I need to talk to. I need to stay in that world because that's what this whole strategy and product line and service and everything has been created around. And that's where I'm going to experience my success. And then what are the added value things that make a difference with my product as opposed to, you know, my competition? So those are the things that I would want to get crystal clear with a client, with a salesperson, so they can go out and execute really efficiently and carry a message forward, right? And hopefully have fun with it, right? But that feedback needs to be there as well when times are not going well, right?
Right, yeah. And that communication really is, I agree 100%. That communication is so key if you're going to be a successful sales professional, both communication really in every direction, your communication with your sales manager, your communication with your customer, your communication with operations. Actually, on that, my personal experience and my opinion is that there is nearly an unavoidable friction that exists between the sales department and operations, or sales and fulfillment, or something. And because there's always seems to be the operations feels that the salesman is overselling, and the salesman feels like operations just isn't creative enough, or something along these lines. And I was wondering if you could speak to that a little bit, and with your varied background, what your experience has been.
So virtually every sales role that I've ever been in, whether it was, you know, starting out young sales guy, or managing a team, there's always been sort of a rub between operations and sales folks out in the field, right? Because if salespeople are very successful, operations might be overwhelmed with the amount of work that they have to do, right? If salespeople are not very successful, then they blame the salesperson for not being, you know, articulate and effective out in the field. It's difficult to quantify what that salesperson brings to the table in a particular area if that area has already, you know, if there's a knowledge of the sales service or product that you're bringing to the marketplace. And then operations thinks that some of the sales came in just through osmosis, right? Just because we're here, we're getting sales. Just because we did a good job on a previous project, we're getting sales. And I would agree with that to some extent, right? If you're in the right climate where you're the biggest guy in town and you're, you know, responsive to your clientele and you go out and do a good job, your business is gonna do well, right? And it's probably gonna grow steady. But if you don't have a focus on building revenue density in that particular area through relationships, or building some sort of specialized silo that focuses on like maybe oil and gas or telecom or, you know, whatever, some segment of the construction industry or, you know, whatever. If you're not pushing those boundaries in sales management, the company is going to experience, you know, growth, but it would be growth based on a low effort into sales, right? So as a salesperson, and you're trying to fight these things as far as any kind of negativity between operations and sales, right? Or you should be fighting that any kind of negativity between, because you want the different company segments to, you know, work together, and ultimately you're going to need something from operations, and they're going to need something from you, and you got to know how to communicate back and forth. So, you know, it's again, communication is key as to how you impacted that particular sale or that particular region, or, you know, we just had lunch with this guy over here last week, and look, he just awarded us this project, right? Are they related? Probably, but, you know, you've been working for that guy for a couple of years. Well, maybe, you know, they're probably related. You should just assume that they're related. So, you know, it's one of those things that we've been involved in companies before, Forrest, where I think that if you looked at the clients that you worked for, that was where the opportunity was, frankly. You know, like, you need to exploit those relationships deeper to build revenue density. So, yeah, I think I've never been anywhere where there wasn't some sort of a little bit of a rub between sales and operations. You know, I was with Hilti for a while. Maybe Hilti had an excellent way to as far as fulfillment with tools and things like that. My current role with Screening Eagle, we have a great relationship with operations and fulfillment. You know, they rely on us, we rely on them. There's not a lot of difficulty there. And maybe it's because we've narrowed in on the message and we don't overpromise and we don't, you know, we don't set up scenarios where people within the organization are going to fail. So that message has to be projected by leadership. Leadership should be in a room, virtual or not, and they should be saying, this is how we want this to look like. What they should be doing all the time. This is how we want this organization to look like, right? If you don't say the words, people will wind up filling in the blanks in their head. And if they have a negative relationship with operations, it will cost you money down the road. So leadership has always got to be, you know, this is what we want our organization to look like. This is the vision where we're going. You know, you can ask everybody to pull together, but if they're going in circles, you're not really achieving anything, right? So, you know, the vision piece of it is always a large piece of it.
You know, I worked, this was years ago, maybe almost 15 years ago now, that I was working, or was a long time ago, I was working for another company, another industry, and I was in sales, and my job was to, we had a delivery arm of the company, and my job was to upsell and cross-sell on the existing, you know, for our existing customers. And basically, the way that the drivers saw that is that my job was to go into their customers' accounts and, you know, go in and talk to these guys in a restaurant or a bar or a gym or whatever and sell additional stuff like air fresheners or towels or rugs or just sell other things. And sometimes these were things that these drivers didn't necessarily want to service in their accounts. They didn't want to have to change out that thing, replace that, or bring in these things. And they got quite upset when they would come in with their deliveries and see that I had sold additional stuff on their accounts. And, you know, they would get some money off of that too. But there was a vision from corporate for how this should be working. I should be selling stuff on there. The driver services it. Everybody gets a little piece of the revenue of that. But the water was not getting to the end of the row. Everybody was not on board with that plan. And I was just seen as this interloper, as this guy that had no business being in there, and very not welcome. A lot of negativity, as you were saying there. Not my favorite sales situation.
So this was not the pet cremation role that you had at one point, right?
This was not pet cremation. You know, selling, you know, actually, you bring that up. That was the most difficult sales role that I've ever had, was selling in the death industry. That was tough. How do you do that? I didn't figure it out.
With empathy is what you do, how you do it.
Sure. But how do you like go around, knock on doors like, hey, I see you got Fluffy in the backyard. You know, when Fluffy's gone, like, come give me a call.
No, you hang out at the vets.
Oh, that's it. Yeah. Just look for the people walking in crying. And as they're coming out, just be like, hey, I
I can help. Yeah,
I see you have a puppy there. Just keep on moving. But you, that dog looks old.
You'll need me soon.
Here's my brochure.
You know, I could totally have made this work maybe if I just was like a guy with a trench coat in the back alley and be all like, hey, you want some pet urns? Hey, how about some of these right here? Check this out. That could have been good.
Yeah.
If only. Anyway, lost opportunities. We want to bring this into today also. And so today, what you're doing and where your professional efforts are being focused in on.
So you're currently working for Screening Eagle, but there's also ProSec. Are you mainly with ProSec or just all over Screening Eagle, or what's the relationship there?
So Screening Eagle is, you know, sort of the parent company that owns several equipment lines, right? And ProSec is one of those equipment lines. And my piece of that equipment line is what we call subsurface, right? Subsurface geomatics. So we're essentially using ground penetrating radar to image targets in the ground, which Forrest knows a lot about. Image targets in the ground, and then digitally locate them somewhere on the planet to plus or minus 5 centimeters. So that's sort of what the equipment is designed to fill for a gap in the industry. There is other equipment that we sell that would scan and image targets that are inside of concrete, or, you know, a lot of different mediums that are out there. So GPR is pretty universal. So the organization has tried to be very dynamic with its software, because that's really where the growth is going to be here in the industry. If you think about it, the physics of GPR have not changed. No one's learned how to cheat physics. So the only way that you're going to innovate and be different in the industry is through software. And either that software is going to make it faster, easier to understand, easier to integrate into a business, and then easier to create some sort of a deliverable for your client. That's where we like to feel, and that's where we like to think is our playground right there, where we are advancing the industry through some very creative software that is constantly being innovated. That's where we fit. So
I was looking at the Screening Eagles website. It looked like you guys had some big products, some new innovations come out this last year. Some of those innovations, what's been exciting for you as a salesman to get out there into the world?
So, you know, I've been involved in GPR for quite some time now. Whether working for a service provider or a manufacturer, and I think it's a common theme that whenever you use ground penetrating radar, everyone's always trying to get something more out of it, right? Because they've had that day where they go out with the radar and they're in the perfect soils and they image that target down deep, and it's just like, oh, the sun came out of the heavens and blessed me today because I can use this tool to its maximum capabilities. But more often than not, soils become challenging for ground penetrating radar. And the imagery that you're looking at may not be as clean as what you like. And you're always trying to tweak and show something, you know, figure out a way to do that, get a better image, right? So, the only way to do that is to build out, you know, sort of the perfect GPR antenna that is, you know, going to give you the best possible chance to get high quality data so you can do an interpretation out in the field, right? So our new antennas are multi-channel array antennas, and I think we put together the highest number of channels in like a vehicle mount system. We're over 100 channels. Half of those, well, a little under half of those are oriented like cross-polarized, a term what Forrest would recognize. And then the rest of them are classic orientation. So the other thing that's super cool is that the spacing between these antennas, these channels, it's super close, right? So our density of data is probably higher than anyone else's in the industry. And then to top all that off, we're using a step frequency continuous wave antenna. And I know the BS meter goes off the charts when people hear that because they think it's some sort of glossy sort of way to characterize your antenna. But it is very different. And what we're doing is we're offering a bandwidth of frequencies from maybe 40 megahertz to 3,000 megahertz. And what that means is that the higher the frequency, the higher the resolution. The lower the frequency, the deeper the penetration into whatever medium you're trying to work through, right? So real quick, I won't get too technical because I just can't. But if this is the surface of the ground and I have a frequency that is very high, it's going to travel into that surface and travel as far as the soils or the asphalt or the concrete or whatever is going to allow it to travel before the signal starts to attenuate, right? So high frequencies are only going to travel a short distance, right? So what we're doing is we're saying, okay, well, this frequency is 3,000 megahertz with our multi-channel arrays. The next step in that process is going to be, I believe it's 3,960, right? And the next step beyond that is 3,920. So if I step down through these frequencies, I'm always utilizing a frequency along that bandwidth. And as that frequency travels into that medium, it's going to offer the highest resolution as per what that soils or that medium is going to allow, right? So theoretically, you could say that we're going to give you the highest resolution on a particular target in the ground that you possibly could get, because at some point the high frequency attenuates and it doesn't travel any deeper, but then there's another one right behind it that travels just a little bit deeper.
Yeah. Well, and Screen Eagle has really been, you know, has been nothing if not innovative, coming up with a lot of different, I mean, both, you know, doing some great things with the hardware, but as you were saying, it's mostly an emphasis on the software. That's where there's a real differentiator between Screen Eagle and a lot of the other offerings that are out there, is really the user experience you're going to have, the software experience and processing and all that. So that's very much the reputation that Screen Eagle has. So I think that's really cool. But we really want to get our entire podcast episode with you here, Matt, has been building to this question, and I hope you're leaning in and getting ready for this one, which is that we want to know how often Screen Eagle is flying you out to Switzerland for like trainings and stuff. If you're ready for a little advice, I'd recommend that you request like maybe every software update. You should probably go and probably spend like a week out in Switzerland just to make sure that you really got a full grasp on that. To my two cents.
So I've been over to the corporate headquarters once. Mm-hmm. And frankly, if you travel as much as I do forest, you're really anywhere you go in the world, you really just don't even want to get on another plane. But
yeah, it's all airports. Yeah.
It's all airports, and they all blur together after a certain amount of time.
That's why you've got to spend a full week there. I mean, it doesn't make any sense to spend just a couple of days. You got a full week in Switzerland.
Yeah, you're still away from home, but
yeah, you still just want to be home.
my vision of travel is definitely. Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, all my kids are out of the house, but my vision of travel is definitely it's not glamorous. So you just have to like take care of yourself when you're on the road, so you don't get just sick and tired and weak.
So you just reminded me of something. When I was I was still mostly in the field. I was transitioning into a sales role where we both worked for GPRS. And when I was doing that, I was living in Salt Lake City at the time, but I covered all of Utah, Idaho, Montana, and Western Wyoming out of Salt Lake City. And for whatever reason, there was just a lot of work that I was doing up in Montana and Kalispell and Bozeman and Billings and just a lot of Western Montana travel. And so this would be like 6, 8, 9 hour trips. But I was also really busy in Salt Lake City. And so what would end up happening is that I would put in my calendar, I would block out a lot of time, like block out all of Monday to travel up to Montana that day, and then do the job on Tuesday and maybe drive back that night or something like that. But what ended up happening is I would have to just fill up all of Monday. And so I would work all day Monday in Salt Lake, and then I would just have to like kind of stop by my house on the way to Montana, pick up some clothes, eat some dinner real fast, and then continue on the road. And if you notice, there's no sleeping in there. So what I do is I drive for 2 or 3 hours or something like that till I got tired. If I got tired, then I pull off to the side of the road. I don't drive tired. And then I would just sleep in my truck. And I would sleep in my truck for a couple of hours until I just couldn't stand how uncomfortable that was anymore. And I'd drive for another couple hours. And I told you this, and I remember that after one of these trips, I told you about this. And you said, "Forrest, you've really got to take care of yourself better. That is ridiculous. that you're doing that kind of stuff. And I remember thinking like, oh, I didn't even think about that. Yeah, I guess this isn't really sustainable, is it?
That's why I've been accused of being a hotel snob more than once. And
you stay in. You're above it's the accountants.
It's the accountants that say, "Oh, why don't you stay in this hotel? That's a nice hotel. That's nice enough. You know, that's cheap and cost effective. But you know what? If you do this, you know, week after week, month after month, year over year, it's actually your home. So, you know, you don't want to stay in." And I've walked in the lobbies, looked right at the reception, and said, "Yeah, I can't stay here." And then walked out. So, I mean, you got to take care of yourself when you're on the road. And you get it. Like, I now, it sounds weird, I hang up all my clothes. I do a lot of ironing just to get some sort of grounding. So you don't feel like you're rushing around like a nut and never really, you know, land anywhere, you know?
I get it. I'm, if there was anybody who rushed around like a nut, I did that. I did that plenty. And, it was not pleasant. I think that aged me a lot. I've got a lot of gray in my beard and I think it's all from those years. Okay. So Matt, final thing, what is the best way for folks to reach out to you for, anything, for information about Screening Eagle's products, for one-on-one, like face-to-face, sales management for dog sitting or anything else that you do?
Sure. I like the dog thing. I do have a dog. My telephone number, I can give my telephone number right for us. It's, I don't care. People can call me. 603-892-6099. That's my cell phone if anybody wants to chat about anything that was said today. Also, I have an email address like everybody else, Matthew, MATTHEW, .dragon, DRAGON, at screeningeagle.com, not screamingeagle.com, screeningeagle.com.
So they should buy that domain too, just in case, just to get people to redirect to Screening Eagle.
You know, I'll report that up.
Okay. Thanks, Matt.
Okay. Thank you, Forrest. I appreciate the opportunity.